What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome back to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today, this is the second part of this series that I'm doing here at this Conscious Discipline Conference. And today we are going to talk about something that is really important and really foundational if we hope to be able to guide children in a way that is healthy, in a way that is effective, in a way that is reducing harm, avoiding harm. If you do not have these seven skills and powers, we're likely going to inadvertently cause harm. It's just how it is, because our unconscious, how we just pass things on. You know, I talk all the time about breaking generational cycles. These skills and these powers are essential for breaking generational cycles. Okay, so we're going to talk about the seven skills and powers, and we're going to talk about how to build the brain of an infant and toddler, specifically focusing on infant toddler, and we are going to dive into that. So first, before we do, let's list the seven powers and skills, okay? I talk a lot about the skills, but I honestly probably don't talk enough about the powers really indirectly. I talk about them, but not as directly as I'm going to talk about them right now. So you have your seven skills, which many of you may be familiar with. And if you're not, it's okay. We're all learning. This is why you're here, right? Composure is the first skill. Assertiveness, encouragement, choices, empathy, positive intent, and consequences. Now, with each skill, you want to have composure. You want to be able to use assertive communication. You want to be able to encourage in a way that is helpful. You want to be able to give choices and empathy and positive intent and also consequences in a way that is helpful. But we can't do that. What opens up our ability to use these skills are the powers. If we don't have the power, we won't be able to access the skill. So I will tell you, we'll talk about the powers in connection with the skill. So the power that you need to have is to be able to get composed. I didn't say, I was tempted to say maintain composure, but that's not how I like to frame it, because I think it's unrealistic to talk about composure in a way that we'll never lose our composure, right? And that's not the goal. The goal is to be able to recognize when you are losing your composure and to bring yourself back to alignment too, so that you can make intentional actions that align with your values. So composure, and the power that is connected to composure is the power of perception, right? And so composure is the skill that says, you know, being the person you want others to become, right? We always talk about, you know, we'll say things like, you need to stop yelling, right? You know, and maybe they're yelling because they don't feel heard. So the child is yelling so that they can be heard. And then now we're yelling so that we can be heard. And that's one example of, you know, not teaching, not modeling the skill that we're trying to teach, which is counterproductive to what we're really wanting, right? So being the person you want others to become, right? It's not just, the perception, right? And what does perception say? What is this power? How do we get there? How do we become the person that we want to become, that we want others to become? And the power of perception says no one can make you angry without your permission, right? And so we have to be able to have that power, right? And so there was an example today of, you know, you might say things like, oh, it rained. I'm having this rain is making my day so bad, right? And you know, what that is saying is that for us to be composed, we need to be able to control the weather patterns, right? Which is not realistic, right? You can only focus on what you can control. And No one can make you angry without your permission. So that means snide comments or what we might sometimes see as disrespectful language or cussing or, you know, whatever the behavior is. You know, behavior doesn't happen to us. It happens in front of us, right? And if we give the children the power to make us angry, if we give them that power and we say, you're making me angry, you're making me mad, right? That is a lot of power to give to a young child, to a child, to anyone, right? That's a lot of power to give anyone, right? You want to be in, have that power for yourself, right? And whenever you put in control of your feelings, you put in control of yourself, right? And so if you're saying, you're making me angry, I have to spank you, you're putting that child in control of your behavior. And that's not what we want to do. For us to teach the skill of composure, we have to have the power of perception, right? I've talked about this many times in many videos about how it's not the way that we, people are like, how can I be patient? How can I be patient? Like, how do I learn to be patient, right? And it's a huge part of it. Yes, part of it might be us, you know, taking care of ourselves and kind of building those systems and all that stuff so that we can care for ourselves. Yes, that's true. And then something important for us to be able to recognize, and that's something that's foundational. But really what we want to do is we want to be really in control of our perception, how we see things, right? You know, this isn't just a bad kid trying to just get one over on me, just trying to hurt people. If we can see this behavior when a child hits as, you know, they are a child who's just having a hard time, right? They're just having a hard time. Maybe they're a good kid who's having a hard time. We can control that perception. We will feel that the intensity of that emotion, we might still feel triggered, but the intensity of that will decrease greatly if we can be in control of our perception. Okay, so that's just the first one. Let's see if we can do some more here. And hopefully we're still recording because my computer just went blank. And we are still recording, so great. So segue to the next skill is assertiveness, right? And assertiveness is all about saying no and being heard, right? It's about setting limits respectfully. And to go a little bit deeper into it, it's you know, when we're teaching children the skill and we're using the skill, it's about communicating, you know, what is, you know, what the boundary is, you know, what's not okay with us, and how we'd like to be treated instead, right? How we'd like to be treated instead. And that other part of how we'd like to be treated instead, just having some great conversation about how important that was, is because that sets up the moment for problem solving, right? And not just saying, don't do this to me, don't do this, stop it, don't do it, I don't like that. Yes, that's a start and something that we may need to say, but what opens that up, what opens us up to problem solving and actually moving forward is that next piece of saying, I want you to do this instead, right? And I think I did a whole podcast episode, if you look on, about the skill of assertiveness and what that looks like. I've done videos on it too, so kind of look through my videos and breaking down what that, how teaching that skill of assertiveness, what that looks like throughout the age groups, because obviously an infant is not going to say, I don't like it, right? They don't have those skills, right? And so we are often that the voice for them. We're speaking for them. And we might say something like, he doesn't like it when you squeeze him. He wants you to touch him gently like this, right? And especially for a young child, we're not just going to say that. We're also going to model it and do a gesture of exactly what we expect the child to do. Visuals are really powerful. They're really helpful. And that's something that is actually kind of part of another skill. That is the skill of assertiveness. Now, how do we access the skill of assertiveness? Like what, you know, someone said today, I think it was Laura, a certified instructor, said that the powers open can either open our heart or close our heart to being able to use the skill, right? And so the power that allows us to get access to the skill, to use the skill, is our power of attention. And our power of attention says, what you focus on, you get more of, right? Another word for that, I think it's Tony Robbins who says, where energy goes, Where your attention goes, energy flows. Sorry, oops, made a mistake. Oops, by the way, stands for our opportunity to problem solve, which is something that we very much invite and honor in conscious discipline. What you focus on, you get more of, right? And, you know, there's also another part of it. You know, the brain science behind it is that where we put our attention will direct the neuroplasticity, which is how the brain changes and grows and how we mold the brain, right? And so that directs all learning, right? And so what we're focusing on and we're putting our attention on is going to help literally change and mold and build their brain. So it's really important that we are able to focus on what we want and able to focus on the skills and able to focus on what we want the child to do as opposed to what we don't want the child to do. Another important part of assertiveness is not just the words we say. It is the tone. It is the body language, right? It's all that nonverbal communication, because that's the whole right hemisphere of the brain, right? That's which is the emotion, which is the more emotional and creative part of the brain, but that's also where all of our nonverbals kind of reside. And so we need to speak to this part of the brain. This is the unconscious part of the brain, right? And this is where, you know, these generational cycles that you're trying to break, they reside. All that, you know, the triggers, they reside. That's where they reside, right? In the left hemisphere is the more logical part of the brain, it's more about the pattern seeking part of the brain that we also have to address and speak to as well. We have to speak to both parts of the brain so that we can integrate the brain. And you'll see, and I'll talk more about how, you know, it's not just the nonverbals. It's not, you know, but it's also, we're also using a lot of logical, a lot of patterns and repetition that will really speak to the left hemisphere of the brain. So what you focus on, you get more of. That's the power of attention, which opens you up to use the skill of assertiveness, right? And something I didn't say about composure and perception is that when you are composed, then you're able to access the higher parts of your brain and you access more skills. So let's go to encouragement. Encouragement. Now, what is connected to encouragement, it talks about just really building that connection and unity, and you're really like the connection between people, and you know, if you're in a household, your family, if you're in a classroom, your class family, if you're in a school, your school family, and that's what encouragement is all about. And what unit and the power that we have to really be able to focus on, and that what that opens us up to use encouragement is that we're all in this together, right? Unity says we're all in this together. Unity is the power. It says that we're all in this together, right? And this encouragement and this encouragement connection kind of, you know, helps to kind of build that sense of belongingness. And that primes the brain for willingness, right? Which also in a school setting will, you know, also prime the brain for them to engage and for them to be successful academically. So encouragement, connection, and belongingness. But the skill of encouragement, and I talk about this all the time. Like I said, I got videos. An example would be for a young child, it might just be, "You did it. Way to go." We want to put the focus more on what they did, right, as opposed to just our approval, which a lot of us say something. I like the way that you cleaned up. I like the way you're sitting, which is, I like the way is kind of really communicating is saying that I like you when you are sitting nicely. When you're not sitting nicely, maybe I don't like you so much, right? And that's not what. That doesn't build unity, right? That's more will build shame, especially for the children who are not able to meet those expectations for whatever reason, right? Maybe trauma, maybe something is going on at home at the time. Maybe they're hungry. Maybe they're tired. Maybe You know, they're just not feeling connected in that moment. Maybe they're neurodiverse and a neurodivergent, and they might have to move to learn, right? Or, you know, there's so many different reasons why a child may not be able to meet those expectations, and we don't want to inadvertently, by accident, shame them with our communication. Let's go to another skill, the skill of choices. And one of the kind of skills that you use, or kind of one of some of the phrases that we talk about when we talk about the skill of choices, is two positive choices. And two positive choices are two choices that the child could potentially like, right? Like you can walk to the car, or we can stomp like dinosaurs, right? You choose, right? Or you have a choice. You can pour the water by yourself, or I can help you pour the water. You have a choice. You choose, right? Or you have a choice. You can sit in circle time with us, or you can read a book quietly at the table. You choose. You have a choice. Two positive choices. And choices build self-esteem and willpower. And the power that we need to have to open ourselves up to use the skill of choices is the power of free will. And the power of free will says the only person you can make change is yourself, right? And so there's so often we're trying to change the world, or trying to, you know, focus on other control as opposed to inner control, right? We're trying to control others and make the world go our way, instead of really focusing on what we control and focusing on our own free will, and also recognizing that in other people, that and respecting the free will that others have, as opposed to coercing them into what we want them to do. So the power of free will opens ourselves up to the skill of choices. And this helps us really improve our goal achievement and self-regulation. And these are executive skills, right? And when we teach, what I'm really passionate about when it comes to choices is that with adults, you can recognize that a lot of adults sometimes have a hard time recognizing their choices and making choices, right? You know, there's the classic one of, what do you want to eat? What do you want to eat? What do you want to eat? Like, and it's, you know, sometimes we have a hard time that I know there are so many couples and partners that, and friends that have such a hard time making, you know, small choices like that. And part of where that even comes from is if we get deeper into it. Now, this is kind of going off of my skills and powers, but let's go a little deeper, right? A lot of times we are afraid to make choices, something as small as, you know, where we're going to go out to dinner or lunch, or what we're going to eat that week, or choosing a college, right? Or choosing the job that you want to do, or choosing what company you want to work for, or choosing what state you want to live in, or if you're going to move or not going to move, or, you know, all these choices, they can be difficult for us. And what stops us from choosing a lot is our fear of disappointment, right? And so again, it's us running away from those emotions, as opposed to really embracing that and acknowledging that the no emotions are bad, and maybe they might not feel comfortable, but to not run away from that emotion and to be able to make a choice, to think about what we want and to be able to make a choice. And then if we do feel disappointed, learning to be able to regulate that emotion and being able to acknowledge that emotion instead of being so fearful of that. And so choices can be hard. Choices can be hard. And that is something that I say for myself and to children all the time. You know, choices can be hard. So choices can be very powerful, but that the power of free will helps us access the skill of choices and use the skill of choices and teach the skill of choices to children and use them for ourselves. Now the next one, another one that's really near and dear to my heart, is the skill of empathy. And this is all about teaching children to manage their emotions. And the way that we will do that is by, one of the ways that we will do that is by acknowledging their emotions, validating their emotions, helping them breathe through their emotions. This is a very much an empathetic process, right? Where we might say something, maybe a child's upset, you know, and we might first really notice them, right? And the skill of noticing, if you remember from the last episode, is a skill that is really helpful when a child is in a survival state. But all the skills that are helpful for children in the lower states are also helpful for children's skills in the higher state. Now, that's not necessarily true going down. Like the skill of consequences is not helpful for a child who's in a survival state. But this, you know, but the skill of composure and assertiveness, it can still be, is still helpful for children who are in a survival state, an emotional state, or an executive state. So that's something to keep in mind. And then one of the ways that we teach to manage the emotions is, in conscious discipline, we talk about this DNA process, which is describe, name, and acknowledge, right? So the D is, we might say something like, your face is going like this. And then your feet went like this, right? And part of the idea behind why we, part of the reason why we acknowledge it is one, to help them to start to notice what their body does, right? And how beautiful is it for them to start to notice when they're starting to feel frustrated or angry, and those body cues, right? That, like as I was talking before, about the brain and that right hemisphere that's connecting that right hemisphere, that those nonverbals of recognizing what their nonverbals do, right? And so we're kind of reaching and kind of touching that right hemisphere of the brain with that. And now something else that happens often when we notice children, we do that D part of the DNA, is they have a tendency to look up at us. Right? And maybe even make eye contact with us. And when they do that, we have these things called mirror neurons. And that's those are the neurons that help us kind of mimic what other people do. And we're going to use that, right? We say your face is going like this and your feet went like this, right? Not being too specific. We're going to say like this because we want them to look at us. We want to encourage them to look at us. We're not going to necessarily force them to look at us, but this is a way that we can encourage it in a pretty organic way. And they look up at us. And then we're going to do something called download calm. We're going to take a breath in hopes that we can kind of share some of our calm and some of our composure with them. It's important for us to be composed before we even start this process. And then, you know, that can, you know, help move the child up in their brain. But then we may say something, they validate their emotions. And then we're using a little bit more of the left hemisphere. Now we're connecting that right hemisphere with the left hemisphere. And saying something like, you seem frustrated, or you seem angry, or you seem sad, or you seem concerned, or you seem whatever that emotion is that they're feeling, right? Not something like, you seem like you want to, it seems like you don't want to take a nap. It seems like you don't want to go to sleep. That's not validating the emotion, because you're not wanting to go to sleep. It's not an emotion, right? You seem emotion, right? And the beauty, and this is the adult connection, this is the beauty of this, is, you know, when I talked earlier about how it's not about staying composed, it's about getting composed, it's about bringing yourself back to composure. And what we need to do, what we have a lot of hard time doing, is because we a lot of times don't even notice, you know, within ourselves what the nonverbal things that our body does to let us know, to give us information that we're angry or frustrated or sad or disappointed or whatever the emotion is that we're feeling. We can't even notice that in ourselves. And so we keep on escalating and escalating instead of getting that information from our body. Maybe it's squeezing your hands. Maybe you're doing something with your shoulders. Maybe the master instructor said, I'm going to mess up the name. She said that her mom used to do that, the bachata or bachica, I want to say. I know I'm butchering it. Spanish speakers, give me grace, please. I know I'm oopsing here, and maybe I'm going to go and figure it out later. Maybe next episode, I'll try to pronounce it right. It means little foot, though. And her mom used to stomp her foot, and they used to call it the bachica. And so that's one of the kind of nonverbal things that you kind of recognize that you're escalating, or that she could have recognized that she was escalating. And in the story, the master instructor talked about how she said she was never going to do the bachica, but then she did do it. But that was a cue for her. That was a nonverbal cue for her to recognize, ooh, I am not composed. And if I want to be the person I want others to be, then I need to do maybe some breathing and say some mantras, or I need to do some self-regulation here. And so in when we are noticing this in children and saying, you seem, or noticing your face is going like this and your feet are going like this, and we're building that awareness within them. Now, over time, it's not going to happen overnight, but over time, we're creating connections in their brain to recognize when they are escalated, when they are not composed themselves, right? And then going into the you seem, and then being able to identify what they're feeling. You know, Dan Siegel talks about, Dan and Tina, No Drama Discipline talks about, you got to name it to tame it. And so, but before you're able to name it, you have to be aware of it, right? And so that kind of that nonverbal, the noticing what they're doing, what their body's doing, helps us kind of create that awareness so that we can become aware of our emotion, and then we can name our emotion, and then we're starting to the process of self-regulation. And the A part is the acknowledgement part. That's the you wanted, right? You wanted, or you were hoping, right? You wanted a toy. You were hoping to pour it by yourself, or you wanted to walk to the car by yourself, or you were hoping that you would have more screen time, whatever it is, right? And now we're connecting that right hemisphere of fear, the brain, that left hemisphere of the brain, while simultaneously starting to move them up in their brain so that they can access their executive skills. And just to, I said this a little bit yesterday in the first part of the series, but composure and assertiveness are those skills that can be very helpful for kind of moving us up in the brain. And encouragement, choices, and empathy can be helpful when we're in the emotional state of the brain, right? Composure and assertiveness can be very helpful for the survival state. Encouragement, choices, and empathy can be very helpful for the emotional state. Right. And the power that we have that opens our heart to using the skill of empathy is the power of acceptance, accepting the moment as it is. Right. And accepting the moment that maybe that child hit someone. There's a moment we have to accept that already happened, right? We can't turn back time, right? And we can't accept it. Then what we have a tendency to do is we have a tendency to kind of overreact. Is how could you? What's wrong with you? And we go into our punishing mode, and we go into using our survival skills because we can't accept that it already happened, right? And you can't change what happened. But what you can do is you can be in control of your free will of what you do in this moment and how you respond in this moment and what we do now, right? And so for us to be able to give empathy to children and to practice the skill with children, to give empathy is we have to be able to accept that this happened and accept that this is the moment, right? When we aren't, because, you know, what happens is, and this is the resistance to empathy a lot of the times, like, you know, they hit and you're going to give them empathy, and you're just reinforcing the behavior by giving them empathy. You're understanding them. You're understanding them so that you can help them solve the problem next time. So they feel seen, so they feel connected, so that they feel like they belong, so that they can access the skills in the brain to do something different now in this moment. And then other moments where they're having this problem of, This other child has a toy that I want and I don't know what to do. This child took my toy and I don't know how to get it back. Or my mom poured my milk for me or cut my sandwich in a way that I did not like. And so now, maybe they're screaming or they're, calling you a name, or they're, you know, saying something that does not meet the expectation of what you were hoping for them to do. So accepting the moment as it is opens us up to empathy, right? And this empathy, when we're able to kind of give this empathy, it integrates the brain for personal responsibility and self-control, right? So when we're the opposite and we go and we shame, what's wrong with you? It's your fault. What happens, the reaction is from children and also adults too, is that now I have to defend myself. Especially as a child, but even as an adult, my very survival depends on being connected and belonging to this community, because we're social creatures as humans, and it is ingrained in us to need community and know that we need community and others, that for survival, and our survival depends on it, that now I have to go into defending myself and say, well, he made me do it, or she told me to do it, or it's because they did this, because they, you know, they were calling me a name, or they were too close to me, right? And so you see, and you probably sure you hear it, it's the deflecting of the personal responsibility. And then we sometimes we get triggered and then we'll say things and we're not going moving towards problem solving at all. But if we respond non-judgmentally with empathy and communicating that they belong and they're accepted, even though in this moment they did, their behavior is not something that may not be, you know, acceptable, or their behavior is not the word I want to use. Their behavior is not something that we approve of. Is that that's a better language? Even though it's not something we don't approve of this behavior, we still love and approve of you as a human being. And you're still accepted as a human. And, you know, you need to be able to know that so that you can learn from this moment, and that you can be open to learning, right? And so that's also part of this next skill that we're going to talk about, the skill of positive intent. And skill of positive intent is about creating teaching moments with oppositional, shutdown and aggressive children. And the skill of positive intent is really about just seeing the best in others. Well, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. The power that opens us up to the skill of positive intent is the power of love. And love is all about seeing the best in others, right? But for us to have positive intent and create these teaching moments, and when the child hits, to see the best in them, that they're a good kid having a hard time, you know, they just didn't know what to say. They hit you, not because this child hit, not because they're a bad kid, but because they wanted the toy and they didn't know what else to do, right? Or they scream, not because they are trying to dysregulate you and ruin your life and dysregulate and overload you with sensory stimulation. Maybe they screamed because they felt out of control, powerless, and this is literally a cry for help, right? So really seeing the best in others. And another thing, this is about to go a little bit deeper into this. We're always creating these stories and these narratives about children. And when we are in a survival state, or an emotional state, that the stories we create about children tend to be negative, right? And you know, you're gonna, if I let you hit now, you're gonna be hitting for the rest of your life, and you're gonna go to jail, and you're gonna be in prison, and, you know, right? And you're not gonna be a productive member of society. And we tell ourselves these stories, right? And we're always making up stories, right? And we don't know that to be true, or we can see it differently, right? We can choose to see it differently. That's a choice that we have. Back to our skill of choices, we can choose to see it differently. And how you might choose to see it differently and see the best in them might not even always be 100% accurate or true. And that's okay, because we're making up stories anyways. We might as well make up a good story, right? Because there's too much risk in making up a bad story, and you know, more likely that it's not true. But then we start to put our attention towards this bad story, and we put our attention on this child being bad, and that will direct our actions, our behavior, our nonverbals, and that will direct the neuroplasticity, how that child's brain is molded and grows. So we have a huge responsibility to really see the best in children, because on the opposite end, we can, by creating these good stories about them of like, you know, you didn't know what else to do, right? Then we can kind of change the brain in a good way, in a positive way. And whatever you think about the child is going to end up being true, right? You think the child's bad, you're going to end up being right. You think the child's, you know, good, you're going to end up being right, right? And to be honest, too, on a side note, I really hesitate to even say anything about good children, because, you know, even saying that there's good children almost kind of acknowledges that there's, like, got to be bad children out there, right? So I don't even really prefer the term good, like a good child. I think there might be helpful behavior and maybe hurtful behavior. But that's just a little extra little side note nugget for y'all. And this optimism of positive intent produces oxytocin, which increases trust, safety, and moral behavior, right? And so, like, the more that we create these good stories about children, it's going to create trust. And they see, when they feel that we see the good in them, that this is going to create trust. And it's going to it's going to help their body brain produce the chemical that will increase the likelihood that they will feel safe and they will make better choices. And then we get the skill of consequences, which is all about helping children learn from their mistakes. And the power that opens our heart up to using consequences in a helpful way is the power of intention. And that says that mistakes are an opportunity to learn. And understand that the brain functions differently under threat. So if we are going in, a lot of times the consequences, we're trying to become the consequence. And honestly, I think I did a podcast episode about the skill of consequences, so I'm not going to go deep into it, because what I will say is that there are natural consequences, there are logical consequences, and then there are illogical consequences. Natural consequences happen as a without our intervention. You know, child runs inside and they trip over a chair. That's a natural consequence. Now we're not going to go to the child and say, "Nah, nah, nah, boo, boo. See, I told you." And we're not going to do that, because that's just us being a jerk, right? But we can help them learn for those and can help them process the moment. And I have I actually go a lot deeper into all of this in my online course, if you want to go get it. And I have a whole video about consequences, how to use them, and all that jazz. And if you get my online course, and you tell me you got it, and there's a question that you have that hasn't been answered, I will direct you to where that answer is in the online course, and or I will make a new video to make sure I answer that more clearly, or make sure that I address that thing that you're struggling with. But you got to buy the course first. I'll be here for you. And then we have logical consequences. And logical consequences are related, respectful, and reasonable. I'm not going to go too deep into that, because I think I'm wrapping this up right now. But related, reasonable, and respectful. And then illogical consequences are not reasonable, related, or respectful. And they really are not helpful at all. And what's important to know is that natural consequences motivate children to learn new skills. Logical consequences motivate children to use skills that they already have. So we don't want to use logical consequences if they don't have the skill yet. We also don't want to use logical consequences if they don't feel connected to feel like they belong, they're connected. they're not in that kind of executive state, we don't want to use logical consequences. This is not going to be helpful. They're going to have a very hard time learning anything from it, because they're, go back to the last episode if you want to learn more about that, because just the way the brain works. And then illogical consequences just punish children for not having the skills yet. So those are the seven powers and skills. And I said that we're going to do, so yeah, I'll give a very brief part of the serve and return. How do we build brains with young children, infants, and toddlers? The way we build brains with infants and toddlers, one of the most powerful ways that we can do it is something called this, you know, it's called the serve and return. Some people also, you know, characterize it as a dance that we do. And it's really about these moments of bids of connection that children give to us, and then we kind of reciprocate. They look at us and we look at them back. That's a serve and return that helps build connections in children's brain, and it helps them build, it helps build those neural pathways to help them better learn how to better be able to self-regulate and have language skills and so many other skills that we want children to learn. The foundation of that is having a lot of serve and return opportunities where it is, you know, maybe there is even doing peekaboo, right? Or even, you know, being playful. This is something where I love you rituals can be very helpful too. There's a goo-goo and you say gaga, right? Even if you're just babbling back and forth. Even if you're having a conversation with them, you might be like, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, you do want that toy. Blah, blah. Yeah, it's pretty far. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you want the toy? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can help you. You know, having a conversation just like that, even if they're not saying any words, that serve and return is powerful and is building neural connections in that child's brain. So, and this is something we do a lot of, especially in these infant toddler years. And something else I heard in the conference that I really like in terms of relinguaging something, a lot of times we say that a child is relationship resistant. Something we can do to relinguage that is some children are more relationship selective, and it might be a little bit more difficult to build to build those relationships with some children, right? And we can feel very honored when a child who is relationship selective chooses us and selects us to connect with, even if it's just for a moment, even if they just glance their head over and look over for a moment, look over to you for a moment. And so this builds the brain of especially infants and toddlers. So I hope all of this was helpful. The seven skills and powers. And I cannot wait to, I don't know what we're going to learn about tomorrow, but I can't wait to share it with you and dive deeper into it with you in the podcast episode. Hopefully I've done pretty well so far. Episode number two of the series. Let's see if I can do episode number three tomorrow. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining this series. If you like this series and if there's anything that, like, please, like, as you're listening to these podcast episodes, please, you know, give me feedback on Instagram, send me messages. If there's anything that you heard that really resonated with you, please tell me, because it's helpful for me to learn what's resonating for you, and it helps me better help you and helps me figure out what better helps other people. Because if it resonated with you, it's likely it resonated with a lot of other people out there. And it's something that I can continue to focus on, drill down on, or even if there's a question that you have, you can ask. Like, I listened to your podcast, but there was a question, a burning question that I had. Maybe you can answer it in the next episode. But I would really recommend listening. Like, I'm going to be much more in tune with it this week. So do it soon and follow along. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great day and a great month, a great year, a great life. Remember, avoid being a perfectionist, be an improvementist. The goal isn't to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve a little every day. Bye.
What's my name? What's my name?
What's my name?
What's